Welcome to Season 11, Episode 9 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday, the 1st of May, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and in the community. I'm Mark, and joining me this week are Alan.
Hey, rap fans.
And Marty.
I honestly. Hello.
Hello. We're all back then. We made it.
Yes.
Through another fortnight.
Just about. It's been that long, really.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Have you been busy?
Quickly.
No, it's been a week. It's been a week. What are you saying?
Oh, yes. Yes. Sorry.
Oh, yes.
Lose the magic there.
Oh, dear. So, Alan, what have you been up to this week?
So, last week I mentioned I've been playing with Windows 95. This week I thought I'd step it up a notch, and I've been playing with MS-DOS.
Is that an upgrade?
Yes, very much so. So, the internet's favourite contrarian, Brian Lunduk, has made a computer game called Linux Tycoon 2, which is a follow-on from his gangbusters game, Linux Tycoon, which was made available many years ago under the GPL. And it struck me that nobody had made his MS-DOS game, Linux Tycoon, available more easily on Linux. So I dug out a DOS boot disk and a copy of Microsoft Visual Basic for MS-DOS. And I compiled, I got the code off of GitHub. What?
Visual Basic for MS-DOS?
Yes.
Wow.
It's the original Visual Basic.
Yeah, the OG. The OG VB. So I downloaded the source from GitHub, put it on a floppy disk, and put it on a drive, and booted MS-DOS, opened up Visual Basic, and compiled it. I compiled a standalone executable, and then I wrapped it up with DOSBox and put it inside a snap and put it in the Snap Store, because why not?
Aren't Magic. Snaps amazing?
Yes, they are. Bringing old esoteric software that nobody wanted to your desktop in 2018.
Wrapped inside operating systems from the past.
Yes, yes, totally.
With automatic updates.
Just out of interest, what version of MS-DOS are you using on your computer?
So on this particular computer, I'm cheating a little bit. I'm not using a VM or anything, so I'm not cheating that badly. But I've actually formatted a USB stick. I had to format it with four drives because it's too big. It's 2 gigs. And
you can't it's four partitions.
Yeah, it's got four partitions. And the C drive that has MS-DOS on it and actually also has Windows 3.1 on it. What was the original question? Oh, yeah. That's MS-DOS 6.22 and Windows 3.1. Okay. But the thing is, I can carry that USB stick around, plug it into pretty much any computer and boot into MS-DOS off of that floppy disk and then play DOS games and stuff. So I don't have to have a machine dedicated to DOS, although I do.
You bought about three in the last 4 weeks or something?
Yeah, more on that next week, maybe.
Oh, no, not even more. I can't believe you.
I can't even. Yeah. No. So I've been playing with MS-DOS. And it was jolly good fun.
Right. Martin, save us from this retro madness. What have you been doing?
Well, I've been doing a couple of things. I'm going to have a callback to Alan's, though. So I was a guest on Destination Linux podcast, episode 67.
We'll have a link. Worth listening or watching. It's very good.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you to say so. and I've also just returned from UbuCon Europe 2018, which took place in Spain. And before I get to anything that happened there, I'm not going to betray any confidences, but there was a presentation by somebody at UbuCon Europe 2018 with a slide that referenced Brian Lunduk, and the tagline under Brian's name simply read Linux blogger and professional troll.
Was it a presentation by Brian Lunduk?
No, it wasn't a presentation by Brian Lunduk.
Hang on, we've mentioned him twice in the first 5 minutes of the show.
I know, I know. Let's move on. Is that enough? Well, maybe this is the episode we get that out of our system.
Right, yes, exactly.
So anyway, yeah, I've had a fantastic week in Spain, in Asturias, organised by Marcus Costales and his army of co-organisers. And it was a fabulous 3 days of geeking out about Ubuntu and giving talks and listening to talks and all the big parties in the evening. It wore me out somewhat. I was kind of dead on my legs by the end of it, but it was jolly good fun.
Excellent.
So we're going to put a link to the Destination Linux episode in the show notes.
Yes.
So our listeners can hear how you explain exactly what my involvement in the Ubuntu Mate project is.
I think it's important for everybody to get to the 2 hour mark in this particular podcast.
Oh my!
Can we just start there?
we'll understand
straight at that point. Yeah,
I'll embed the YouTube video, and you can either listen to it or watch it. But it was they're a good bunch of guys, and it was really good fun to make. And unlike this podcast, they allowed me the latitude to
I think it's time for the news.
Yep.
And now I think it's time for some of those lovely news stories. Alan, what news story have you found for us this week?
So, you know these little boxes that you get that play computer games that are retro things? They've got a bit of a resurgence at the moment. Nintendo
like
have had a couple
of them.
The
SNES Mini that I got for Christmas,
the Mini NES,
that kind of thing.
The Mini SNES, those kind of things.
Yep.
Well, there's a new one that's been rumoured, and there was a launch that was going to happen, and then it didn't, and now it looks like it's on. The Atari Box launch date has been announced. It's going to go on Indiegogo as a crowdfunder, and it launches at the end of May.
Right.
So this is a box that sits underneath your TV, plugs into the telly, and you play games on it. The initial price will be $199.
Wow.
With no controller.
What's the point of that?
Well, I think probably you can bring your own controller, because they've got all kinds of buzzwords in their pitch, including dual band Wi-Fi, Bluetooth 5, USB 3, 4K, and HDR. So I assume one of those is a port I could plug a controller into, or a radio system that I could pair a controller that I already have.
Is it an original 15-pin DIN port?
I think you'll find 9-pin DIN is a D, sorry, not DIN, would be original. So they've got two controllers that you can get. One is what they call Classic, and it looks very much like your
traditional...
Is that
a joystick with one button?
Yes, the red button in the corner.
Yeah.
But it looks like a more modern take on that. Like,
it's got a USB plug.
Yes, and it's kind of like lit up, and it doesn't look like it was thrown together in 5 minutes. It looks, I mean, all I've seen is renders. I haven't actually seen the device, and I think some of them may be photos, but most of them look like renders. And they've also got a modern controller. They call it modern. It looks like the Nintendo Classic controller that you get for the Wii and the Wii U.
Yeah.
So what era of Atari machine is this a implementation of?
Well, this is a tricky thing, because they talk about it having lots and lots of games, and they talk about it having quite decent specs, you know, all this stuff like dual band Wi-Fi and, you know, a decent Bluetooth, USB 3. Why would you need USB 3 if all the thing was going to do was Atari 2600 games, right?
More importantly, why do you need 4K and HDR for Yar's Revenge, which I see as one of the titles in this?
So take your eyes out with those pixels.
It's likely this thing will do more than just Atari console. So chances are it's probably going to do multiple systems, not just the
Do you think it's likely it might also have the Atari Jaguar embedded in it somewhere?
Could be. There's not been an awful lot of detail released about what this thing is going to do. And some people are speculating that it's... So the technology that could be inside it could be something like the NES and the SNES, which, as I understand it, those are both exactly the same hardware inside those two devices. It could be something like an ARM CPU that boots up.
Yeah.
And, you know, run like the mini
like Atari emulator kind of thing.
C64. Yeah, it could run emulators. Or the other thing it could do is it could be a hardware system, an FPGA, which you flash with updates over the wire, which would be a good reason why it has Wi-Fi.
So I would be fascinated to see what this thing is when it's actually released, and I hope it's more than I'm imagining, because some of the titles that are listed here are Asteroid, Centipede, Breakout, Missile Command, Gravatar, and Yar's Revenge, and they want $199 for this without a controller, and for about $50, you could build an equivalent system with a Raspberry Pi that can play all of those just fine.
I had to ring the, but I could just use a Raspberry Pi for that bell.
But I could.
But yeah, because that's what everyone always says about all of these machines every single time they're announced, right? They're playing off the Atari name. I don't think there's any person who ever worked at Atari who's ever touched this box or has been involved in any of the development of this thing. They might pull someone out of the graveyard who like used to work on Atari many years ago and, you know,
Steve Jobs,
use his name, much like the Sinclair ZX Vega had Clive Sinclair and Sinclair Research on their on their payroll as a director, you know, for a bit of credibility. But I don't know. It feels like this is a very pretty, well-marketed device, but in actual fact, it is just a box with a bunch of emulators in it.
Let's hope that they stretch beyond just the 2600 then to exploit that hardware.
And one final thing, it doesn't deliver till next year.
Oh, well, that's disappointing. Hang on. They're going to launch it at the end of May this year.
Yeah. But,
and it's,
you know,
not going to be out
until... It's a crowdfunder. Obviously, they need to gather your money so they can go and buy a load of Bitcoin miners and then mine and then eventually deliver your thing. No, I'm being rude. But, it's a bit daft because they've had all these renders and pictures going for a long time. I think it's a well-marketed machine. But whether it'll amount to anything, who knows? I think
someone's going to steal their lunch money between now and next year.
Yeah, but who has the Atari name, that prestige?
It doesn't matter. So long as it looks the same and it does the same stuff and it comes out in the next 9 months, they'll beat them to it.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Right, my story's next, and it's that Rise of the Tomb Raider has been released for Linux.
Ooh.
So this is the sequel to the Tomb Raider reboot, which I think we've spoken about on the show before, probably when I was playing it. This was originally released in 2015-16 for consoles and Windows, and it's another port by Feral, not long after they released their new game mode app for Linux.
Oh, we mentioned that a couple of weeks ago, I think.
Yes.
Is game mode a feature of this game?
No. I imagine it supports it. It you know, triggers it to do its thing, but it's not. I don't think it's built into the game. I think you have to install it separately. And it's not packaged for Ubuntu, which is a bit of a pain, considering that the officially supported distro is Ubuntu 17.10 for Rise of the Tomb Raider. I thought that was interesting, considering that the current LTS, as it was released, was 16.04. It doesn't officially support 16.04, although I can tell you it runs on 16.04. But I think one of the big reasons for that is it's using Vulkan for the graphics, which is the first game I've played where that's been the only option. I've had a few other games where it's been OpenGL or Vulkan.
So is this one of these things when you launch the game, you get a few radio buttons of what engine you want to use when it launches? Or is it only Vulkan?
It's only Vulkan.
Huh.
Which is like F1 2017 that I bought some months ago. That was also a Vulkan-only title on Linux.
Yeah, so that means that you need up-to-date graphics drivers for whichever graphics card you're using,
and which ones are supported. Like, is Vulkan supported on my forgive me, on my stupid ThinkPad that's got Intel only, is Vulkan supported on that, or does it need something like NVIDIA?
I think up-to-date Mesa drivers will support it on fairly recent Intel cards and AMD cards
at like 3 frames a second or something.
It depends on exactly how old it is. But yeah, I had to install the latest NVIDIA driver for my NVIDIA card, which I got a couple of years ago.
Well, Mark, we're discussing Alan's hardware, so it's either going to be a crusty Intel IGP from about 10 years ago or an SIS integrated chipset from 1998.
Neo Magic, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the high end of totally embedded graphics.
Yes, but there have been some issues reported. There was quite a lot of crashing for NVIDIA users. In fact, I've experienced this myself quite a lot. Like about once an hour or 2 hours, it would just freeze up and crash.
And is the game
it's auto save, but you sort of go back to the last checkpoint, although you've got all your stuff still. It's quite good at that. It's just kind of annoying, considering that this is a sort of a AAA game. Although they have now released a public beta, which fixes the issue. I've tried it, but I don't think I've played for long enough to tell if it stopped it crashing or not. Mm. Altogether, though, really good game. Really enjoying it.
I'm pleased to hear it, because I won whatever the earlier Tomb Raider game is for Linux.
Tomb Raider,
okay. I wasn't sure if it had some, you know...
Snappy name.
Clever name. So I won that one, and I bought this one. And I fully... plan to actually play through both.
Yeah.
Now that I've got some time on my hands after 1804 being out the door.
Oh, I've just noticed actually that this you said this is released in 2015-16. So this isn't actually a new game. It's just
This is just new to Linux. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yes. And how much was it?
I got it on sale for something like £15 with all of the expansions.
Oh, that sounds all
because,
right.
Because yeah. I mean, I think the full price is like £40. Mm. But there seems to be quite a lot of sales going on at the moment because the next game is about to come out for Windows. So I think they're doing quite a lot of promos if you watch out for them.
Groovy, I'll keep an eye out for that.
Yeah. I think I'm enjoying it more than I enjoyed the previous game, so it's definitely worth getting.
Awesome.
Right, Martin, what's your story this week?
Well, we've got a follow-up on something we discussed a couple of weeks ago, and the Iranian law enforcement authorities have followed through on their announcement that they were going to block Telegram. So that's actually happened now. Telegram had their telecommunications infrastructure license rescinded. The Tehran's chief prosecutor has claimed that the service was shut down because it was allegedly used by pornographers and terrorists. So Telegram is no more in Iran. It joins another couple of countries, and I didn't realize that elsewhere it had been blocked, other than Russia, of course. Russia have also now blocked Telegram. Telegram in air quotes. So the Russian government have been requesting that Telegram hand over encryption keys in order that they can access users' messages. Mm-hmm. And because of it's not a decentralized, Telegram is not a decentralized system, but it is something where the infrastructure is scattered around, you know, different cloud providers around the world. So rather ham-fistedly, the Russian government's technique of blocking Telegram is to block all of the network blocks for the large cloud providers that Telegram has any IP addresses in, which includes pretty much most of Google and Amazon AWS compute infrastructure, which is obviously disrupting Russian internet users' access to most of the internet.
Yeah. Hmm. I have noticed Telegram have some outages recently. I was wondering if it might be related to this kind of activity going on.
It could well be. I mean, obviously, most of UbuCon Europe was being coordinated on Telegram. And when we had hours at a stretch of, you know, Telegram being unavailable, that rather, you know, fouled with our...
Switch back to IRC.
...ability. Well, no, we didn't. We just, you know... Talk to each other.
Talk to each other.
You are physically in the same place. That is an option.
Yeah, it's a good, reliable, solid fallback position, as it turns out.
Awesome.
They followed through on it. But interestingly, this also disrupted, or it was anticipated to disrupt, some Iranian government organizations who were already using Telegram.
Yeah.
So in the meanwhile, there's an Iranian-developed alternative to Telegram, and I don't know if the pronunciation is correct, but it's Surush or Surarush or something like that. And this is now being promoted by the government as the alternative to Telegram, it comes...
I'd trust it.
It comes full-featured with Death to America emojis and propaganda stickers.
Seriously? Right. Is that humorous or seriously?
That's seriously.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But is this they've just because it supports Linux, sticker packs like Telegram does and someone's made some?
I think they are part of the default service.
I see.
As far as I understand it. Not being able to access it from here, but have it.
Oh, you totally can.
Oh, you can.
There's a .run file. The Linux download is a 64-bit .run file.
You have to run it as root.
Camera. We should totally get that snapped.
You first.
Oh dear. Right. Save us from this madness. Let's go on with the rest of the show. And now we've got a roundup of community news and events. And first up this week, a user, Draco Frost, posted on the Ubuntu subreddit asking why there's no demand for torrents. And they posted a screenshot. They've got all of the flavors of the 1804 desktop ISOs open in transmission, the BitTorrent client. And they're seeding them all, and no one's downloading any of them.
Hmm.
So
it's interesting.
Is this a defunct technology now?
It's interesting because I started seeding the torrents when the release came out. I grabbed the torrent files, spun up rTorrent on a spare laptop here, and left it running. And once it had chugged through, I think I was serving up to some people at that point, but not afterwards. Like after it's seeded, I don't know, about 2 to 3 times each of the ISOs, some more than others. It didn't seed anymore. There were like no more people asking for it. Now, part of that could be there are a ton of people seeding it, or the seeds that we have on our backend are fast and people are preferring those. People's systems are preferring those. Yeah. Or people are just using the direct download link and they're just not using torrent anymore. Or there's no demand for torrents. It's hard to know which of those is true.
Mm-hmm. Well, answers on a postcard.
I just don't know. Like, we certainly have seen quite a lot of demand for the ISO, and we've seen a lot of people installing it and a lot of people talking about it. So it's not like nobody is downloading it. But I think we've got to the point now where the infrastructure and our cloud delivery of the ISO images is that good that you can actually just click on it. Yeah, you don't necessarily need the torrent anymore. Yeah. I know we always used to say, oh, please, please, please use the torrents because it'll alleviate the load on the web servers. Whereas now we've got these giant CDNs that can deliver all this stuff super fast. So I think it's just not so much of a problem. And I appreciate there are some people in the world where this is still a problem. But for the most part, it isn't an issue anymore. The torrents aren't really needed.
Yeah, cool.
Maybe.
Right, next up, GOG.com has announced that Ubuntu 18.04 is going to be officially supported for its Linux titles, and not only the main 18.04 release, but also all of the flavors and derivatives.
What does that mean, officially supported, as far as GOG are concerned?
So that means that if you buy a game and it doesn't work on that distro, then you can get your money back.
Okay. So,
good for them.
Yeah. Yeah. They also had a celebratory thing with gaming on Linux.
Mm-hmm.
They had a little promo earlier last week where they were like celebrating the release of 18.04. I think they did it on the Saturday, the Friday or Saturday after the release came out, just to help join in the celebration of 18.04 coming out. So that was quite nice. So it's nice that, other people outside of our bubble are enjoying the release.
Yeah, and they said that they'd been testing for quite a while pre-release and managed to get 90% of the Linux catalog tested with 18.04, which is quite good to know that sort of thing's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Next up, Purism and UbiPorts have officially announced that they're going to collaborate to offer Ubuntu Touch on the upcoming Librem 5 smartphone.
Yeah. I saw a presentation from UbiPorts at UbiCon Europe, which touched on this and other things. As I understand it, UbiPorts are going to be doing the lion's share of the engineering effort here. Mm-hmm. And what Purism are going to be doing is providing some development boards that UbiPorts are able to do the hardware enablement and all of that sort of thing.
Oh,
so I think UbiPorts are expecting their development boards in the next month or so, and then it will be down to UbiPorts to actually, enable those devices such that it's ready when the Librem 5 ships in 2019.
Yep, January 2019. Cool. It's cool because, there's been a lot of announcements in the past about what the Librem 5 will or won't ship with, and there was speculation that it'll be GNOME-based or KDE Plasma mobile-based, and, a lot of people said, well, there's already a mobile platform, like, right there, ready for you. You could use this in Ubuntu Touch. Mm. And while Ubuntu Touch wasn't a complete success for us, the community have picked it up and it's gone from strength to strength. And it's great to see that they're working with the Purism guys to land an image that will work on those devices. I think it's fantastic news.
Having gone to three Ubu cons now, Ubu ports always have a strong presence there. Mm. The first I went to, Ubuntu Touch was still stewarded by Canonical. The last one I went to in Paris was the first one where it was 6 months after, you know, Canonical had stepped away from that project and UbiPorts had stepped in. And this year their presentation was like 1 year on, you know, how are they doing? Mm. But I would say UbiPorts, a large majority of the people that coalesce around UbuCon now are people that are from or interested in UbiPorts. It's a big part of the Ubuntu community. And I actually felt quite out of place with my Android phone because it's probably the only place in Europe you could be for 3 days. And Ubuntu Touch was the majority operating system in and around the event. Yeah.
Wow.
Cool. Right, we've got a few events to mention. So first up is Freenode Live 2018. That's on the 3rd and 4th of November in Bath.
Mm, I quite fancy going to that. I went to the one last year. It was really good. Oh, cool. Really enjoyed it. Had a kind of old campy Lug Radio Live kind of feel, a little bit more professional with some good stands and good talks from people you will know from the free software community. So yeah, I definitely recommend that.
Cool. Talking of unprofessional events, OggCamp.
harsh.
Hey, I'm allowed to say that. No, John's doing a great job.
Yeah.
Can't
fault
him.
Keep pedaling. Keep going.
One thing that we're doing a bit differently this year is we're having a call for papers. So before, we've always filled the schedule track by thinking of people who we imagine that people will find interesting, but that's quite hard to do year upon year. So we've decided to ask people to offer us their talks for the schedule track. So if you go to cfp.ogcamp.org, you can offer us your talk and you might get on the schedule track. And even if you don't, you can still come along because it's an unconference.
I had no idea that OpenCFP was a thing. This is
rather
cool.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a free software that enables you to take calls for papers. That's brilliant. That's really cool. I like that.
Yes. And finally, we had an email from a listener whose name I forgot to put in the show notes about an event called Missing Maps. So this is an OpenStreetMap event. There's one happening in Reading, and I think they're happening all over the place, but they're basically to... I guess filling
the gaps
in OpenStreetMap.
Wow.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's amazing.
That's interesting.
Because I remember being at the very first Lug Radio Live I ever went to in Wolverhampton. There were a whole bunch of people who put on high-vis vests and went off doing a mapping party or whatever you want to call it, where they all walk around with GPS trackers.
A survey, I think they call it.
Oh, do they? That was my first experience of seeing people actually going out en masse to do it as a group and walk up and down roads and make sure all the road names are right and all that kind of stuff. And at the time, when you look at the map, it's like largely empty back then.
Yeah.
And in fact, we interviewed someone from OpenStreetMap at that Lug Radio Live. I think that was actually season one. Mm-hmm. So that, like 10 years ago, that would have been.
Cool.
But that's amazing. Yeah.
Well, it looks like these are happening all over the place throughout May. So yeah, we'll have a link in the show notes.
Are you a freedom-hating iTunes user? Redeem yourself by helping spread the word about Ubuntu and open source. Leave a rating to tell others what you think of the Ubuntu podcast.
And that's all for episode 9. Thanks very much for listening.
Yes, thank you very much. You're right there, Martin.
Yeah, I'm just surprised we managed to get through that in good order.
Oh, you have little faith.
Mark keeping us on track for the whole
thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Thing.
Yes, showrunner extraordinaire.
What are we talking about next week?
I think we'll be talking about the release of Ubuntu 18.04 and what we think about it.
See you then.